Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, let's get it going right here, right now. This is Diamond Conversations, and you're listening to a brand new Diamond Conversations here exclusively on the Place to Be Nation podcasting network. If you didn't know by now, my name is Ian, and every single week we sit down to have a Diamond Conversation with somebody from the world of baseball, the wonderful game of baseball. And this week is no different as we welcome in a member of the Cincinnati Reds, New York Mets, Los Angeles Dodgers, and even spent a little time there in Philadelphia. He's a former Rookie of the Year, a World Series champion, a 1978 All-Star, Mr. Pat Zachary joining us tonight. Mr. Zachary, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, it's great to have you after our connection ordeal we've had this evening, but nonetheless, we made it, and I'm ready to talk about your career and take a walk down memory lane.
Well, I appreciate you guys being interested in having me on.
Oh, absolutely. What a time. You know, we grew up in New York. We grew up as Mets fans. So obviously, you know, we know the name Pat Zachary. We know exactly, you know, what you were linked to and the moment that brought you to New York. And we'll get to that. But why don't we talk about how you're doing these days, Mr. Zachary? How are things in your neck of the woods?
Well, Texas is nice this time of year. It's beautiful. I have spent some time with my grandsons and, I'm back in Waco. They live in Austin, and I came back here to Waco this weekend, spent time with my granddaughter, my daughter, and her husband, and had a good time with them. Back in my residence at a retirement center, overlooking the lake and a golf course, and it's real nice right now. Weather's good, and the air is clear, and couldn't be more beautiful for first part of coming up October.
Yeah,
so, you know, it's really nice.
Yeah, it kind of snuck up on everybody because it's been quite the catastrophic year, but we made it to the fall, and you know, this is when the leaves are changing and baseball is entering its second season. This year it's a little different. Have you had a chance to check out this new baseball structure they have and this new expanded playoffs and this weird 60-game season they had?
I have not. You know something? I'm a real bad baseball fan these days. I go through it. I may watch for a couple of innings if the pitchers are throwing strikes. But for not, I don't pay much attention to it. I turn the channel. I do a lot more reading these days than I do watching TV. I'll go 2 or 3 days without turning on my TV set. I'll pick up a good book and just get started, and it might be 600 or 700 pages, and I won't put it down. And that's kind of the way it was when I was playing ball. Instead of, I wasn't much for playing cards or dominoes or any of that kind of stuff. I'd play occasionally, but I was a big time reader. I like to read a lot and kept my time occupied.
What kind of books are you reading these days? What's keeping you occupied, those long books?
Well, I've got a couple of Clive Cussler that I'm rereading. What was the one I just read? Can't remember the author's name now, but big time murder mystery with a Tom Hanks character. About the devil and the Illuminati and all this. You know.
Da Vinci Code.
Might have been. One of those type of books in there. And, several things like that.
Yeah, can't go wrong with Clive Cussler.
No, there's some of it that's good, some of it that isn't, some is better than others, but He's got so many that he ghost writes, and I don't see. Good Lord, you look at the amount of books on the inside of the covers. Look at the amount of books that he co-authors, and it's just enormous.
Yeah, it's something like 80 something books.
Yeah, yeah. And I get to play a little golf every now and then. I'm not allowed to drive a car anymore because of epilepsy. So, still get a couple of buddies that, you know, come pick me up, and they put up with me, and we go out and play golf. So, you know, it's not as exciting as having your wife around to pick at all the time, but make a day through it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and I'll tell you, from the baseball side, you didn't miss a lot. This was an oddball season, to say the least, and it definitely was a little unorthodox, if I could use that word to describe it. But it kind of had. We were speaking with Jerry Royce a little earlier today, and I referenced the 1981 season being a little off the wall. Kind of had elements of that where it wasn't traditional, but nonetheless, you know. You talk about wanting to see guys throw strikes. Well, there was a lot of those. There's a lot of home runs, too. So the game's definitely changed. It's not the same. It's something that, you know, baseball purists, somebody like Doug or myself, would rather go back and watch some old games and, you know, see your generation play, because you guys left it all out there and gave it your all, without a doubt.
Well, and bringing up that subject, I'm a little saddened by the passing of Tom Seaver and then Jay Johnstone. There's been some guys lately that I've played ball with in that generation that have passed away. It still touches you. It just, you know, you have to have respect for them, how they went about things, and they still had fun. Left it all out on the field, and that's the way it should be, I guess. But you know, I don't know. You have to be incredibly fortunate on or off the field. So, anyway.
Yeah, without a doubt. But you know, with mentioning Tom Seaver, obviously, you know, that's the name to bring up when we think about, you know, you coming to the Mets and you know, they called it the Midnight Massacre, and Tom Seaver being traded away to Cincinnati, place where you won Rookie of the Year and won a World Series, and you went from being on the Big Red Machine to the big blue and orange mausoleum that was Shea Stadium in 1978, but. Or 77, 78, you know, you definitely, you and Tom Seaver linked, without a doubt, but, you know, that, again, that's not necessarily a bad thing either.
Well, no, he was a nice man. He was one, you know, a tremendous pitcher. And as it worked out, the trade didn't bother me. Couple of days before, I was 3 days away from getting married, and I didn't care about the trade at all. When it happened, it was such a shock, because we were going to get married and go to Pete Rose's house and have the reception, and we look up in the seventh inning, and there's an announcement up on the Diamond Vision that, you know, they just traded me and three other guys for Tom Seaver. Big roar went up in the crowd and everything, and after the game was over, I was just stunned as all get out, sitting there on the bench, and had to answer a few questions in the locker room, and when I got dressed and came outside, I was living in Will McEnany's townhouse. Will had been traded to Montreal, and his wife was there getting some of their personal belongings and things like that. And she was friends with my fiance, Sharon. So, as I said, we were just 3 days away from getting married. And I came walking out, and she said, "Did you just get traded?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Here's what's going to happen." As a matter of fact, she had just driven her little Karmann Ghia Volkswagen convertible from Houston to Cincinnati with a friend. And I flew a friend back to Houston. And so we were both going to have a car in Cincinnati. But then I said, you know, you've got to get yours shipped back to Waco. And I've got to fly to New York in the morning. I've got to be there and do this press conference and everything. I need you to pack up everything. I'll be back in a couple of days, and if you'll still have me, we'll get married and we'll start all over. Well, we did that. I went to New York, did a press conference, got my photograph made in a Mets uniform, put it on a baseball card. The next day, flew back to Cincinnati. She and I went to a Justice of the Peace. The next morning, I flew to Chicago to meet the team. And I think a couple of days later, they put us up in the honeymoon suite. She flew in and met us. And we just kind of started from there. We found a place to live about 20 minutes from Shea Stadium. Turns out it was right two blocks away from where Son of Sam was popping people.
Oh, wow.
At the time that we got traded, I had a little 280Z Datsun sports car that was a really, really nice car. It was nice. So here we are married. We can't get anything in the car. It was definitely like a two-seat car. We went back to Waco and bought a Cadillac. So we have the Cadillac about, oh, I guess, 2 months. Had it through spring training. About 2.5 weeks after I was in New York City with it, this is now 1978. We get up one Sunday morning and go to the ballpark. We walk out in front of a little basement apartment we were living in. And Sharon looked at me and said, "Where'd you park the car?" And I said, "Right, and the car had been stolen. And the kicker, the real part that got me was we called the police, and of course they came over. It took them a few minutes, but they got there. And Sharon was in tears and wanting her car. And the one cop said, "Oh, lady, I'm sorry. That thing's been chopped up in a million pieces. It's gone now." And she just, "Wah!" She was crying. But I was, you know, they were looking at me like, you know, "Hey, what are you going to do?" And I was like, "Yeah, I know." But I figured, what the heck? If we were going to go through that, I'd get a vehicle that I'd get a little respect with. And I went to a Chevy dealer out on Long Island, friend of Joe Troy's, and I bought a Blazer. That son of a gun, boy, it was a tank. And even the taxi cab didn't mess with me when I'd go to the ballpark. So after that, it was okay. But as soon as we could, we got out, lived on Long Island in a house where Jerry Grody had previously lived. and it was real nice. And they had an older couple that were really, really nice people. He was a retired doctor. And the whole neighborhood was really nice. It was only about 20 minutes from Shea Stadium. It was real pretty. But we enjoyed our time there. We used to spend our anniversary every year since it was, I think, June the 20th. We used to spend our anniversary at the Trade Centers at the Top of the World restaurant.
Oh, wow.
And that was just magical. We'd take a limo into the city. It was just such a heartbreaking moment for us when those buildings went down. And to see all those people that, you know, might have been friends that passed, and oh my gosh. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that that shapes my thinking for a lot of my opinions nowadays. Things like that that happen in our world. You know, I try not to be too biased, but I'm sorry. Sometimes that type of thing comes out. You know, but it is what it is.
Yeah, we're from that area in New York and New Jersey. We're from that area, so you know, we were a part of what was going on at that time. And ironically, it was baseball that kind of helped, you know, seal the wounds of some of the people in the area, which is, you know, again, it's just one of those ironic things. But just, I want to go back into what you were saying in the story. By the way, what a welcome to New York with having your car stolen. That couldn't be any more of a welcome to the city. But the you were said about the picture itself. So the picture that they took for your 1978 baseball card, they took that the day you arrived to Shea Stadium, because looking at it, you know, you're still, you know, you don't have the full beard in there yet. You're still pretty clean shaven compared to what we would know you as a few years later. So that was taken just as you arrived to Shea Stadium?
Yeah, a couple hours after we did an initial press conference, we took a couple of photographs in Joe's office. There was Bobby V, there was Doug, there was Steve. Danny Norman had been sent to Tidewater. And so they had the four of us in there on Joe's desk, and you know, we were, you know, goofing around, cracking up and doing stuff. And later on, they had all of us in uniform go out and take pictures and this and that. And that started our time as Mets.
Crazy. Again, you know, they call it the Midnight Massacre. So it changed the landscape of the team.
Yeah, we were lucky. Sharon, we were received very, very well. People fell in love with her. And first time they saw her going up to home plate in the little hot pants and for the Goliath softball team, they really liked her. She could hit, and she was good looking. And she and the other wives had a softball team that they took to the Bahamas and played the Bahamas. The Bahamian women's team, national team, and they got killed, but they had a good time. You know, they we made a lot of friends there. It was a unique life. My son was born there the first day of the strike in 81. My mother and dad came up, of course, during the series. They were there at Yankee Stadium, and then when we got traded the next year, they kind of knew a little bit about New York, and they brought their trailer camper to the house that we had bought in Connecticut in 1981, and Sharon was pregnant, and the very first day of the strike at, what was it, 10 o'clock in the morning, my son was born, and then we had the next 59 days there at home with him being born and my parents there to help us out with him. It was a very unique time.
Pat, you mentioned Bobby Valentine there for a second, and you know he had quite the reputation as a manager, being kind of a quirky manager, you know, thinking outside the box, doing things that might buck the norm. What do you remember about Bobby V as a teammate?
I would love to have seen Bobby healthy. I'd like to have seen him healthy because he was pretty darn good athlete, wounded like he was. But his leg was just, I've got a friend of my son's who had almost the same type of injury in high school football, whose leg has that, looks like lightning struck it.
Oh, wow.
You know, like Bobby's did. And he was horrible. We paid the price when we were kids.
Yeah.
I was lucky. I busted my left one. They put the cast on wrong and wound a hole, made a wound in the side of my leg, and make a long story longer, eventually made my leg 2.5 inches shorter than my right, and I flunked the physical for the Army when I was 19. But I just recently had it repaired, so now I've got both sides working correctly. But that thing that Bobby had was just, oh gosh, they might be able to fix it now, but you know, he went from being a 9.4, 9.5 hundred-yard dash guy to barely able to finish the finish line. So, and you know, he wasn't going to hit 50 or 60 home runs. His game was speed. Bobby was a smart guy. He learned baseball, and he had plenty of people he could always call on for questions. And I liked his wife, Mary. She was nice. And she and my wife got along real well. They were nice friends. I wish I could spend more time with his father-in-law.
Mr. Branca.
I'd like to pick his brain a little bit.
Who were some of the guys whose brains you did get to pick when you came up?
I was very fortunate in that my very first manager was not well liked at all.
Who's that?
Ron Plaza. Do you remember the book Ball Four?
Yes,
absolutely.
I haven't read it in a long time, but yeah.
Well, Ron Plaza was not well thought of by Jim Bouton.
Oh man.
Plaza was a drill sergeant type, but he was a very, very smart baseball man. He could probably forget more baseball than anybody would ever know. And I had a lot of respect for the guy. He was my very first manager, rookie ball manager, and I learned how to do things the right way. Professional way, and it stuck with me all through the minor leagues, where I was fortunate enough to have Russ Nixon, Jim Snyder, and Vern Rapp. Not a lot of people had respect for Vern Rapp, but he was okay with me. I knew what I had to do. I didn't have questions with Vern. He was, you know, it was either his way or the highway, and that's pretty much how I was raised. If you didn't do it right, the old man, where I was at my house, my dad would let you know about it. And that's the way things were. You were an employee and do what you were supposed to. Go out and play baseball and shut your mouth.
As far as some of the guys that came before you, one of the things that I love looking at online is you were there during the Mets when they were still doing Old Timers Days. And Old Timers Days in, you know, 1979, 1980 packed a lot bigger punch than they do right now. Do you remember, you know, being around those guys from the 40s and 50s when they would come in for those kind of games?
I was lucky enough. I do not remember any of that. But let me tell you two stories. I don't want to be long-winded. I know your time is valuable here. I had just pitched and won the first game of a doubleheader. Can't remember the year. Herbie Norman was the equipment manager, and I had taken a shower, was getting dressed to go back out on the bench and sit for the second game. And Herbie Norman is walking by, and he's got a box of baseballs in his hand. And he says, Pat, I've got these Old Timers Day balls from such and such years ago, and I've got four or five of them left. Nobody wants them. You want one of these balls, I'm going to throw the rest of them away. I'll take one. And I just happened to look. There's Joe DiMaggio, Casey Stengel, a number of other big-name autographs. But DiMaggio and Stengel and Jim Constantine stand out really, really well on it because they use a different ink. They use like a Bic pen or something instead of an ink that fades. And I thought, my goodness, how much is this thing worth? And but stuff like that, with regard to Russ Nixon and Plaza and Vern Rapp, just do your job, go out there and play baseball, and then, you know, do what you're supposed to do, and everything else will take care of itself. Sparky was that way. Larry Shepard was that way. Joe was that way. Joe Torre.
Even as a young man? Wow.
I, you know, when I got over to Joe looked at me and he said, listen, all I want you to do is go out and pitch. If you know how to pitch, go pitch. And that's pretty much what he said. Just go play the game. He wasn't trying to get in my head or anything. Now, every now and then, Sparky had done that. Sparky, if you didn't, at times he would, you needed to be left out there and maybe take your lumps. You couldn't always be perfect. And if you got in trouble, he had the luxury. Now, you got to hand it to him. He did have the luxury of being able to go to a bullpen that was so star-studded. So, you know, you can't fault him or his choice there. But, boy, it was hard to take as a pitcher. It was hard to stomach being pulled out of a game, even if you were down one run. And if it's fourth or fifth inning, sometimes you're going to hang on. If you lose, you lose. Pitch 7, 8, or 9 innings if you're going to lose. Or whatever. I'm old-fashioned.
Well, that's why with today's guys, you know, if they only pitch a few innings, they're gassed at 110 pitches by the fifth. What do you know the most pitches you ever threw in a game?
I think 217.
Gee.
When it was about 15.
That's remarkable.
I'm glad you still have an arm.
Well, it was a 10-inning game, and I struck out 21 guys. And at that time, it was a league record. So It was real hard trying to go up there the next day and play a little sandlot ball with my buddies. I had to kind of roll everything toward home plate. They let me play first base. I think that's about as much as I ever did. I don't know. Usually about 130 or 5 or 40. And if you even got close to that, they'd pull you after about 120 pitches.
Jeez. Now, Pat, there's a portion of the conversation we always like to do with guests where we ask you some questions about some trivia about your career. What do you remember of stuff like, you know, most hits, stuff like that? So I'm going to throw a couple ones at you really quick. You struck out two men in your life 11 times each, more than you struck out anybody else that you played against. Do you know the two players who you struck out more than anyone ever?
I have no idea.
One's in the Hall of Fame. The other one is arguably a Hall of Famer. We got Mike Schmidt and Steve Garvey.
I would have guessed on Garvey, but Schmidt, I would have had no idea. I can show you a ball at the old Philadelphia Stadium in the upper deck where they put a bullseye. About two, maybe three rows back was one where Luzinski hit one. And bless his heart, on the right field side was one where Jay Johnstone
one.
And this, I'm not talking no cheapies now.
Yeah.
I must have been throwing real good. I don't know. At times with Steve got me some. Now, I made some mistakes on Steve, and he hit some bullets.
Looks like you handled Schmidt pretty well, though.
Well,
8-for-42 off you with 11 strikeouts.
Well, they're right-handed, and I threw a good slider.
Well, you mentioned home runs. The person who you gave up the most home runs to, I was kind of surprised to learn he played for the Dodgers. He's a current manager in today's game.
Have no idea.
Dusty Baker. You gave up 5 home runs to Dusty Baker.
You know, the same year I gave up a bunch to Garvey, in like in 1982 or 3, I gave up several to Dusty. Because I would try to come inside on Dusty, and I would miss. And the same thing with Garvey. You can't do that. And that's why a couple of times I hit Ron Say in the butt. That's exactly why we had a fight out there one night. So, got to give it up. You got to move.
That answers the trip.
Dusty has the most, huh?
It answers the trivia question. How do you make a penguin dance? You give up a home run to Dusty Baker, and then you put one in Say's back.
Yeah, right in the butt, dude. Maybe that's why Dusty doesn't want to talk to me. He ain't got time to answer my calls when I call down there. I'm going to have to tease him about that.
Maybe he wants to have you stand on the mound. Maybe he'll answer the phone call then.
But, yeah.
But without a doubt, well, we're going to head to the wrap-up portion now, Pat. We appreciate you spending some time with us this evening to talk about your career and talk about some of the cool things going on. Before we say goodbye, is there anything that you want to say to the listeners of the show and, fans of many different teams, the Reds, the Mets, the Dodgers, all the different places that you've been? Any parting words for your longtime fans?
Just pray we all get this pandemic satisfied, we get it done, our elections are done legally, and let's keep a sane and calm head about us, and remember that there's always going to be a sunshine tomorrow, And thank you again, guys. I sure did enjoy this. Appreciate you having me.
Oh, it's our absolute pleasure. And if you want to hear more from us, obviously stay tuned here to Diamond Conversations. A wonderful conversation here with Pat Zachary. And we can't thank you enough. And we would love to talk to you again in the future and find out some more about some of those years with the Mets. I'm telling you, growing up as a Mets fan, Pat, we looked at those late 70s years, and even though we collected every baseball card and knew everybody's name, it was definitely an interesting time. And I also want to throw a shout out to our uncle who helped get this together, because this was a treat to say the least.
Hey, get my senior league card.
Yes. Oh, hey, before we say goodbye, Doug loves the senior league. That was his favorite growing up, was the senior league.
I had all the cards. I read the book. Before we go, do you have any memories about that? I mean, what an interesting time in baseball history.
I've got my senior league championship ring, and I've got a couple of the cards that have my name and Dick Bosman's picture on it.
Oh, no.
I keep getting those all the time. People send me my name on the card that's got Dick Bosman's goofy picture on there. He won't sign it, and I ain't going to sign it.
That's a rarity.
Yeah, it is. Oh, boy. Hey, again, thanks, guys.
We've been talking about doing a whole episode devoted to the senior league with Peter Golenbach, so we'll have to have you back.
I would love to do it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Zachary. We will talk to you soon.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.